Hails, minions and mortals, this is Fang von Rathenstein, lead singer of the most metal band on earth, the Lords of the Trident, and we are running 7 live streams every single month, including full band concerts, solo guitar shred sessions, and even classic Sega CD game playthroughs. So head on over to youtube.com/lordsofthetrident and twitch.tv/lordsofthetrident and subscribe. We've got a Patreon too, so check that out. Do it quick before Andy realizes he played the Lords ad and not the Lord ad.
Hey, it's the Andy Social Podcast, and before we kick into this week's episode, come over and join me on Patreon. Patreon.com/AndyDowling is the best way to support this podcast. Support starts for only $1 a month. Dirt cheap, set, forget, you won't even notice it. And there are additional tiers if you want access to the exclusive Patreon podcast that comes out every Tuesday morning. And if you want access to free stuff, giveaways, free merch, whatever it is, heaps of fun little things over at Patreon. There are additional tiers there to get access to that stuff. Come over and join me over at patreon.com/AndyDowling. It's the Andy Social Podcast, episode 286. Had to check that one. Bloody hell, we're getting on here. My guest on this episode is a return guest of the podcast, Lady Beard. Lady Beard was on episode 165, going back a little while now, and, well, the beard is back. And Lady Beard has a new band, a new project that's it's announced now. By the time this episode comes out, it'll be out. The project is called Baby Beard, an adorable assault on the senses. Once again, in true Lady Beard fashion, absolutely crazy, ridiculous, just over the top. And if you enjoyed the first conversation with Lady Beard back on episode 165, you will certainly enjoy this one. Just a great chat and just a great guy. Just really, really enjoyed talking to old Lady Beard. So I'm going to have links in the show notes. But the most important things to know is that on April 28th, so depending on when you listen to this, go into the show notes and have a look. If you listen to this on time, I will update the links in due course. But in the meantime, I'll have links to Lady Beard and all the socials in there. But on the 28th of April, the first two singles of Baby Beard will be out, and watch me butcher these. The single's going to be Nippon Kara Konnichiwa, and the second song is Pinaza, or something like that. Oh, God, I'm going to butcher. Oh, sorry, guys. So I'm going to have links to those songs in the show notes after the 28th of April. So if they're not in there after the 28th of April, give me a little bit of a nudge or a slap or a little hit across the back of the head, and I'll make sure they're updated. And Baby Beard links will also be in the show notes once everything's launched. But the time of recording this episode and this outro, or this intro, I should say, oh God, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm going to record the outro soon, is prior to announcement. So Baby Beard will be announced very soon after the recording of this podcast. But by the time you hear this, it'll all be announced and out there. So I'm going to update everything as I go. But go to LadyBeard_Japan on the socials. And I will have everything in the show notes, of course, over at andysocial.net and andydowling.net. I think I've covered everything. Check the show notes. But enough crapping on from me. Please enjoy this great chat with the man himself, Lady Beard.
All right, Andy Dowling.
How are you doing?
Good, mate. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Good to hear your voice.
Good. Nice to talk to you, sir. How you been doing? You been all right? Staying alive with the events of 2020 and beyond?
Oh, still feeling the effects of 2020. I think it's going to take a while to rub all that out, but how right. You doing?
Yeah, I'm all right, man. I'm in Japan. Tell you what, this virus will not go away over here.
No, they
just announced we're going back into state of emergency. Ugh. We've still got 1,000 new cases a day or something.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so over this virus. My goodness.
How does that work? I mean, obviously we'll dig into a lot of this as we move along, but how does this work when you try to make plans for anything and then obviously... You know, like I guess we all have gone through this where, you know, you want to do something, but then government steps in and puts a lockdown in place or a state of emergency and all those plans are out the window. I mean, how have you had to adjust to really not understanding what the future is going to bring for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's been rough as guts, mate. I mean, we're launching this new group, which I'm super excited about. Basically, it's, for the time being at least, it's like, okay, so we're doing a pop metal group on the internet. And that's what is now possible, you know? So it's kind of, it's the most unconventional release cycle I've ever been through, you know? Normally you get everyone excited and you have a video and you have like your first show and everyone comes and it's all very exciting and, you know, we've got the video bit is possible, but it's hard to shoot the video because there's not that many things you're allowed to go and do.
Mm.
And then, of course, you can't do the live show. So it's a very unconventional release cycle.
I mean, it must really push you to your limits as far as just psychologically just trying to work out where you fit into everything and yeah, trying to make plans, trying to just keep life moving.
Yeah, I mean, it's very tough. You know, there's like just constant instability, really. And it's like I just found out literally before we started this call that we're going back into state of emergency. And I was so excited because they had just like a few days ago lifted the last one. So I was like, woohoo! So it's like in Japan, right, they can't actually put us into complete lockdown like they can in Australia because Japan's constitution will not allow it.
Right.
So we, like in that sense, we've been lucky in one sense because they were like, they could not put us at home and tell us we're not allowed to leave home like was possible in other countries, right?
Mm.
So the whole time we've been able to go out and go to the supermarket and, you know, you don't get in real trouble if you're caught outside the house. But it's just been just the whoppingest inconvenience you can imagine. Things are closed super early, so you need to be super organized to get anything done, to do your shopping, to do your anything. And so they lifted the state of emergency like a week or two ago or whatever. And I was like, yes, finally. Like, finally you can go and, like, restaurants are still open at dinner time and things like this, right? Not anymore. Straight back in a lockdown. So it's a bummer. So like restaurants, right? Restaurants have to close at 8 p.m. But what that means is last order is at 7 p.m. And right? So if you're not in there by 6:59, you're not getting food. So it's been super inconvenient. And then of course, yeah, planning in terms of what we're doing with work and that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's been rough. What's it like for you guys? You guys are virus free down there. Yeah. You go back to playing gigs and things.
Yeah, we're getting there. I mean, we've had a few little, I mean, like in comparison to what you and Japan as a whole have been going through. I mean, we may as well not have any virus whatsoever. Life's pretty good here. But I think we're in a stage now where we have these tiny little outbreaks. And so some of the cities are having, you know, 3-4 day lockdowns, and so that is more just an inconvenience rather than it sort of stopping everything. And I think from a show point of view, we're starting to get back to normal. I think people, at least in Sydney or in New South Wales, are allowed to stand up at shows now, which is good. It's a nice to get a bit of energy happening in the room again.
Right.
But I think the big thing now, I think they were talking about it yesterday or today. There's a lot of controversy around vaccines and things like that. So the government had promised that vaccine rollouts would start to happen now or around now, but are going to get pushed back and they're going to change the brand or the supplier or the type of vaccine because different results. But it just all sounds too political, and there's a number of other agendas that are going on, and just I think there's just a lack of faith in the government, which has not been a new thing. It's been ongoing for some time. So I think for us, it's grand scheme of things, we're really lucky. I mean, we're in such a good position, but like anything, it's just, you're in the context of where you're at, and there's still a lot that needs to be done. So we're just aching for things to get back to normal. Because I mean, obviously, like in Australia, like, you know, we can get around and mostly do things normally, but you know, good luck getting out of the country, or you know, or getting people to come into the country as well. So all that touring stuff, that entertainment industry is just still completely shot, and we're going to lose a lot of great people as a result of it, because there's just no funding. I don't know what it's like in Japan as far as supporting different industries, but there's been virtually nothing for the entertainment industry, music industry during this time. You know, sports stadiums have opened up, and you're allowed to have thousands of people in these stadiums, but you can only have like 20 people in a room all seated in these tiny little clubs and just won't allow it, you know? So it's just insane and no money to support it. So it's just, it's a weird thing, but it's all relative to the situation that we're in. So, yeah.
I mean, it's like, what well, it's like a great reckoning, isn't it? It's like a, what are they called? Like a disruptor event that turns up and disrupts everything. And there's a bunch of winners and a whole stack of losers. And everyone's just got to figure out how to adapt to it.
And I mean, glass half full perspective. I mean, I've looked at the last 12 months as real opportunity for a lot of people. And I think for just talking about musicians and entertainers, people that work in these industries, I've seen some amazing things that people have done because they've been pushed against the wall. They've had no other choice and they've had to get really creative and just do non-traditional things to keep keep the whole thing moving. And then you've had other people who've just sat back and just said, woe is me, this is shit. Like, you know, I can't do the things that I've done for the last 10, 15, 20 years. This is all fucked and complain about it. And I can appreciate that because it's tough. It's absolutely tough. But that separation of mentality has made such a massive difference to see who has actually come out or starting to come out at the tail end of this with some real drive and some success and some opportunity. So it's very hard because you can't tell people to always be optimistic in times of adversity, but it's been inspiring in some circumstances.
Well, that's good. I mean, hold on to that. Hold on to the inspiration as much as you can.
Whatever you can do to hold on to it. Yeah. I mean, for you, I mean, so this band that you've got, Baby Beard.
Yes, Baby Beard. Yes. So, my new group, Baby Beard. Light up and get positive to promote the new group. Yes. Baby Beard, my new group.
Inject the enthusiasm. Tell me a little bit about the OG, like the sort of where the idea came from. And has this been something that's been manifested out of the past 12 months as far as a new chapter, a new direction, something new to try because of the circumstances that you've been going through over the past year or so?
Well, I was in this other group 5 years ago. And then that group, it was a similar structure. So it was me with two little Japanese girls. And our first single was this song called Nippon Manju. That blew up on the internet. That was kind of the thing that made me famous around the world, right? Yeah. I was already doing okay in Japan, but then that kind of made me global. Anyway, that group went a bit cray cray, but it's been very clear to me over the past 5 years that's what the world wants to see from me. Is what the world wants to see me in my dress and my pigtails with my beard, screaming and dancing alongside two cute little Japanese girls singing and dancing with two music made by the musical team that made that song. And it's just become so apparent. Like, you know, I've been every day for the past 5 years, I've received messages. Why did you leave that group? I liked it. Can you go back, please? I want you to do it again. And it's just been constant, right? So my attitude has been, well, very clearly, this is what the world wants from me. Let's give the people what they want. So, but that has been, you know, up until recently, that's been a bit impossible just because of the inner workings of Japanese show business.
Right.
Yeah. But now finally it is. And I'm not going to go into the details of Japanese show business because it's a whole, it's 10 podcasts in itself.
That sounds like an opportunity. That sounds like an idea that we'll put to the side for the time being. We'll a Ladybeard Andy podcast talking about the Japanese industry.
In the future, I plan to write a book about it. It is so different from anything else. My goodness.
Nice.
And I think probably South Korea would be different yet again. Mm. But yeah, no, like Japan is just, it's so different from every other country. And the way show business happens here is so different from the way it happens anywhere else. But yeah, so for 5 years, we couldn't do it. And look, I did some other stuff and I'm happy with the other stuff that I did. I did this other group called Deadlift Lolita with another wrestler. And that was great. You know, I'm very, very proud of the work I did in that group because they were very difficult songs, as in to perform them was extremely hard physically.
Yeah.
But now we're in a position where we can do, you know, basically do a, what do you call it? Have a retake at that original three-member structure. So I'm like, cool, let's do it. We've got access to the same songwriters again. So I'm like, cool, let's do it. So that's what we're trying to do, and we were all ready to get up and hit it hard at the start of 2020. And then, wap, 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 wah, 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 wah. Oh, yeah, it's a bit frustrating. Now, I'll be honest. I'm not for a second trying to take away from the seriousness of the health disaster that has been this pandemic. Mm. My heart goes out to everyone who've lost loved ones and so forth, and the people themselves who have who we've lost. But a year of forced rest was actually quite a welcome thing in my life. I'd been working very, very hard for a good 10 years. Mm. So I didn't mind having a year to do nothing but, you know, eat and sleep and lift weights and nothing else all day, every day. That was quite welcome in my life. But, you know, now it is a real bummer. You know, we want to crack on with this group, and we got to do it over the internet, and there's no other way. But that said, Baby Beard, my new group, finally, what the world wants from me. If you know who I am and knew who I was before this, and that's probably what you wanted to see from me. So we're finally doing it over the magic of the internet. So please enjoy the product over the magic of the internet until the magic of physical contact returns to human life.
Hey, you just gotta work with what you've got. You've got to take advantage of whatever opportunities are there, even if they're limited. And I tell you what, I mean, we're so lucky that we do have the connectivity of the internet. I mean, you know, if this sort of happened, you know, 20 years earlier, this would have been a lot harder, and everything, everything literally would have stopped, in a lot of respects.
Now that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually a great point. Like, yeah, big time. But I don't know, 20 years ago, I got a feeling maybe it would not have been viable to do a lockdown the way that they have.
Yep, very true.
I think it would have been like, well, everyone try not to get sick, and things would have carried on.
That's it. Yeah, it would have been different. People wouldn't have been able to work from home and had that remote, that technology, because we've certainly lent on the technology to keep everyone sane and keep things moving as best as we can. So yeah, it would have been very different.
And also like the automation that's possible now and things like that. But tell you what, give thanks for the things that are really important. Hey, neither one of us has died from a horrible virus, so gotta be grateful for that, right?
I'm just, that's me touching wood right now. Just
touch that wood. I'm touching my skull. Touching wood. Right. Right.
But that's it. It's glass half full. You gotta try your best to stay optimistic along the way and just make the most of whatever situation you're in. So it is a good point. It's nice bit of perspective.
Well, that's exactly right. So look, Baby Beard, it's two babies plus Lady Beard makes Baby Beard. Coming at you at the Ladybeard_Japan social media places, and then Babybeard's own social media places. See description underneath podcast description for links and so forth. Hey, I've commandeered your podcast now. I'm telling you how it's going to go down. Yeah, sorry.
Hey, you lead the way. I'm happy. I'll follow you, Lee. Go for it. You plug away.
God bless you. Ladybeard, the adorable Kotomi, and the very sweet Suzu coming at you. Our first single, Nippon Kara Konnichiwa, is going to be streaming on the streaming places from April 28th. Can you hear how much my voice changes when I go into promote the product mode?
Well, I get the vibe. I mean, this is years of you, you know, living in Japan and performing to what is a very different audience. I mean, I think the last time we spoke on the podcast, you were telling me about the success that you were having in China as well, and South Korea as well. And I think just the differences of performing in front of a Western audience versus, you know, a lot of the Asian countries. And I think you need to really put the enthusiasm and the theatrics into everything. Like the delivery is just so important because you've got to amplify, you've got to dramatize things. So when you talk like that, I'm just imagining like it's just the videos I've seen of you over the years in front of a crowd and talking and having this character that you've put so much time and effort into over the years. So I love it. I mean, if you want, you can just talk like that for the entire podcast if you want, if you don't exhaust yourself.
Thank you, sir. I got to tell you, I've been talking like that all day. Because we're racking up the promotions and the press for the new group. It's, you know, like we've come into the promotion phase. And so now it's okay, day after day, racking them up, interview after interview, after PR segment after PR segment. So I've been talking like this the whole day, the entire day, talking, mainly shouting. There's no room for breath. There's no room for rest. You have to get it done, and you can only rest once the whole thing has ended. So look, for this one, mate, it's 7 p.m. over here. I've been doing that all for 7 hours already. We can have a pleasant chat.
Oh, mate, I'm sure your neighbours have been loving you today. Just like, what is this guy doing next door?
And also the two girls in the group, these poor girls, neither of them, they're both working very hard on their English, but they're not at the level where they can keep up with my PR voice at this stage. Poor girls have to sit there smiling while I act like a psychopath. just madness. So, yeah, today we've gone through press in English, Spanish, Chinese, and we have not done Japanese today, have we? Yeah, English, Chinese, Spanish today, and the girls speak mainly Japanese, and that's about all. So they're doing a great job.
Oh, exhausting stuff. I mean, look, you got to do it. You got to get out there, spread the word.
It's the only way. It's the only way. If you don't, no one knows who you are.
Very true.
The only way. Now, were you affected by the old Queensland floods?
No, but we did have some floods down in, so my family up in Queensland, I'm in Sydney. So we did have
Queensland. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but no, I was from there though. So you're not too far off the mark. And, we did have some floods in New South Wales as well, but, I was nice and dry, so I was away from it all. So luckily, no one that I knew had been impacted. But it was a little bit touch and go for a couple of weeks there. We had just a crazy amount of rain, and both Queensland and New South Wales copped a lot, and a lot of towns got evacuated and all that sort of stuff. So one natural disaster after another, whether it be fires, floods, and
isn't it? It's like the Bible, isn't it? There's the fires, then the floods, then the plague. Soon we're going to have the frogs falling out of the sky, and we're going to have to mark. What do they do? What did the Jews do? They cut the throat of a lamb and marked the door for Passover. We're going to have to do something like that.
Nobody get any ideas. I'm going to get a few photos now after this, and people are going to get to it.
You can put that in the Lord show. You guys could involve the Passover in the show.
Hey, mate, whatever it takes to get those ticket sales, those CD sales, the streams, the views, whatever.
What's going on with Lord? Let's promote Andy Dowling's activities for a moment. What's going on with your band? By the way, thank you for sending me your last album. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, my pleasure, mate. I'll have to send you the next one. So we just this is weird. I'm talking about myself on my own podcast. Not that that's anything new, but
But
you've given me an opportunity. But we just put out a covers album. We just did an album full of cover songs that we've recorded over the years and a few new ones. And as of this afternoon, because I'm recording this really close to when we put it out, we're going to put it out after the Baby Beard announcement. But this album this afternoon just hit number 7 in the ARIA charts for Australian albums.
Ah, that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you. Ridiculous. No, we didn't. Had no idea. We had no idea that that was even going to be a thing, and it ended up happening. So really good. We covered everything from Savage Garden to, I don't know, just the heavy metal staples, Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, but we did John Farnham and Icehouse and Kylie Minogue and all that sort of stuff. And it's just gone really well.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. I look forward to listening. That sounds great.
I'll definitely send a little care pack in the mail for you so you can check it all out.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. Which Johnny Farnham track did you do?
Well, we went right back. We did an obscure song from his 80s cool days, a song called Break the Ice from the Rad soundtrack.
Rad soundtrack?
Yeah, so it's an old BMX movie from the early 80s. I think Nicole Kidman was in it. And and there was a soundtrack with a lot of awesome 80s songs. And John Farnham had a couple of songs on there. He had Thunder in Your Heart and Break the Ice. And when by the time he got to Whispering Jack, which was obviously the big album, and his career took off from there, all these little singles from the early 80s were sort of neglected. Not really. Mm-hmm. He didn't go back and perform them live or anything like that. But us old metalheads, we all love them. We love these songs. So yeah, we recorded that one, and I got a message actually from John's son, Rob Farnham, it's his favorite. It's actually his favorite song from his dad, and he was stoked with the cover. So I'm like, pass it to your dad. Go on, pass it over.
That's fantastic. Congratulations, mate. That is excellent news.
Yeah, thank you. So that's what's happening in my world. And obviously, you know, we're trying to make the most of what the last 12 months has been. We haven't been able to tour or anything like that. And yeah. So we've like, well, what can we do to keep the whole machine moving and keep productive and stay in people's line of sight. And I guess going back to Baby Beard, I mean, seeing you're on the verge of this announcement, by the time people listen to this, the announcement will be out there and there'll be a bunch of things that people can start to check out or be ready to check out as music gets released. But one of the things I found really interesting was that in the presser that you sent through that the two ladies that are in your band now is it Kotomi or Kotomi?
Kotomi.
Kotomi and Suzu? Suzu?
Suzu.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Like Suzuki without the key.
Suzu. Okay, there you go. All right. So they were chosen from a pool of candidates from all over Japan to join Lady Beard in the group through an audition process. Tell me more about that.
You know, actually, it was not just Japan. It was actually candidates from all over the world. We had candidates from all over the world who sent in for that audition. Yeah, bruh, we did a public audition, and candidates from all over the world sent in. So first we went through a kind of an internet sort of elimination process, and then we got the physical auditions going on. Now, this was actually very interesting. The whole audition process, I got to tell you, was very fascinating for me because, you know, my whole life being an actor and a stuntman and voice actor, which I was before I was Ladybeard, and even in my Ladybeard days, I've spent so much time auditioning for things. This was the first time I've been on the other side of the table. So I've been the person who's, you know, making the decisions about choosing people in the audition. And it is it's a vastly different experience. Mm. It makes you realize that all the times you've been rejected, it's nothing personal. It's because when you get rejected in an audition, it's, you know, it's obviously disheartening. You put a lot of work into your audition and then it doesn't work out and you're like, it's very disheartening. But you kind of realize once you're on the other side of the table, it's not a problem with you. It's just you're not what we need for exactly this right now. You know, so that kind of, you know, makes it all your previous rejections kind of easier to deal with. So we got to the physical audition, and because of COVID, a lot of the kids who we selected to come to the physical audition didn't. And so like, okay. So then out of the ones who did, Suzu, I think, was the very first person through the door. So she was the absolute first person who came in. She was fantastic. She was a little ray of sunshine. Suzu has this beautiful beaming smile, right? So she walked in and straight away the energy of the whole room lifted. And we were like, oh, this girl's fantastic. So she set a high bar for the rest of the girls to live up to. And then further down the road, we auditioned a lot of girls. And then further down the road, Kotomi came in. Great dancer, great singer, really cute. We were like, ah, this girl's fantastic as well. So we ended up settling on those two. But yeah, really interesting process. Have you ever done any auditioning stuff before? Have you auditioned like new members of Lord of the
Rings? I've certainly been on that side where we've had people come in and we've done a rehearsal and an audition with them to see how they fit. And I think just those stereotypical sort of, you know, like an actor going and trying for a role or something like that, I've never experienced anything like that. And I would assume that there would be an element that would probably be leaning more towards that type of dynamic rather than just, you know, auditioning for a band member.
Yeah, with these Japanese idol groups, these Japanese pop groups, the audition process that's commonly gone through, and we went through a fairly standard audition process, is very interesting because the girls kind of, they have like a particular song and dance that they need to do. But apart from that, they kind of get free choice to, you know, kind of show us whatever they would like to show us. So the Japanese talk in terms of like PRing yourself, promoting yourself. So if you have something that you feel is your strength, like, I don't know, you can spin on your head or something, you write that down in your audition form. And then when you come into the audition room, we're like, all right, so I hear you enjoy spinning on your head. Why don't you show us some of that? And so you end up, you know, you're auditioning girls to do singing and dancing, and you end up seeing all these really interesting other skills that these girls have, which they've come in and they've decided is going to be the thing they're going to like try and hook you with. So like one of the girls came in and she was like a kimono enthusiast. Oh. So she came in and in the audition, like putting on a kimono is quite a process. There's a lot of belt tying and there's a lot of correct order and all this kind of stuff. And whilst auditioning, she went from no kimono to kimono. And we were like, well, okay, well, how about that? Another girl comes in. Another girl comes in and she's written on her form that she's good at making funny faces. So we're like, all right. So I hear you can do some funny faces, eh? What do you show us? And she shows us her funny faces. It's so funny. So we saw these girls with these very interesting skills. We get to the end of that and we're like, okay, so we really need you to be good at singing and dancing. can you nail that part? So yeah, some of them came in and we were like, you know, you're really interesting, you're really hilarious, you're just not the thing that we need for this right now. So one girl came in and we were like, if we were auditioning for new best friends, this girl would, we'd grab her straight away. She was really sweet, really friendly, and just beamed energy and warmth, but had never sung before and had never danced before. So it's like, well, I really like you as a human, but we need people who can sing and dance. So the audition process it was a interesting thing, man. And then this happens as well. So you go through your initial cut, like, so the various people write in and there's kind of an initial cut when people who are just clearly won't fit in with what you need or get cut out. And then everyone else, you notify them, okay, you've made first cut, so we need you to come to this place at this time. And then at that moment, a whole lot of people drop out. And it's a strange thing because I think a lot of people kind of auditioned just kind of for, oh yeah, this will be funny, I'll just do this audition, see what happens, ha ha ha. Then they actually get chosen and get told, okay, please come to this audition, and they go, oh, they have stage fright, and they're like, oh, I don't actually want to do it. They freak out and then they don't turn up. A whole lot of them on the audition day, we had, you know, like a list of, say we had 20 girls coming in that day, it ended up being only 15 girls because five of them just didn't show up, or like called 10 minutes beforehand and said, I'm not coming, I'm out. Yes. So, yeah, it's a strange thing, man. You sort of, I guess, you learn about people quite a lot from doing a process like that.
I mean, this would have made an amazing documentary on its own, just this process of just from getting together as, like, yourself with the other people that are sort of working on this project and going, okay, this is what we're looking for. This is the end goal. This is what we're trying to achieve. These are the type of people, the type of qualities that we want. And then putting the word out there, getting interest, and then vetting them and then going through this process is just so fascinating. And as you said, like, what a way to just observe the way that people behave, like human behavior, just to see how they act under pressure. The things that they say early in the piece versus later in the piece, stories might change, their behavior might change. As you said, like at the last minute, people just pull out because they didn't expect to get that far and maybe they were just taking it as a bit of a novelty to begin with, not that committed. Mm-hmm. It's just so many interesting things during this process. It's just, it's such a fascinating thing.
Yeah, it is. It kind of, it's, were you in a band as a teenager?
Yeah.
It sort of reminds me of that process. You know how when you're a teenager, you get your mates from school, and you're like, yeah, let's be a band, even though no one plays an instrument, and you don't have any capacity to be a band at all. And then, you know, then as soon as someone says, why don't we, you know, get some instruments and do a rehearsal? Everyone's like, the other guy's like, what are you talking about? You
know? Well, that sounds like a bit of hard work to me.
That's damn hard work. What are you talking about? We just wanted to talk about being in a band. That was the main appeal of this whole thing. Hey, you interviewed Chocolate Starfish the other day, yeah?
I did. Adam Thompson. Yeah, it was a great chat.
That would have been a great one.
He's, I really... And actually, interesting that you mentioned him. It's, I think, very similar in a way to, I think, a lot of the approaches that you've taken over the years as far as really taking putting a lot of focus into the performance and not just getting up and going, well, you know, I'm a musician or I'm a performer and I'm just going to do my natural ability of just projecting a song or whatever to the audience and that's it. It's a multi-dimensional thing that you're putting together. It's not just audible, it's visual, it's everything. And it's one thing that he talks about so much is that, you know, it's not just about wearing jeans and a black t-shirt and getting on stage and playing a bunch of songs that you've been playing for the last 20 years. It's about constantly reinventing yourself, being flamboyant, putting on a show where you might on the street look absolutely ridiculous, but on stage, you're meant to be there and you want people to remember that. And it's interesting you said that because I see that with you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's tell you what, I think a lot of us who do things on stages, if you took us off the stage and just had us walk down the mall, like everyone would, you know, would run for the hills, right? but it's on a freaking stage. You're there to be looked at and to be objectified and to give the audience an emotional experience. So well, that's your job. So I think if you hold back, you're not really doing anyone any services.
That's it. I think a lot of people, the reason why, you know, even as fans of music and performance ourselves, you know, if we're going to go and see somebody else perform, we go to enjoy ourselves. But I think more importantly, we go to escape for an hour or two. You know, it's to forget about the day-to-day grind or whatever we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. So you want somebody on stage who picks you up and takes you to a completely different place, forgets who you are, you're being brought into their world, and you want that to happen. And if you're just seeing something that's too casual or too sort of half-assed or whatever, then your mind starts to wander and you're not really escaping at all. You're sort of half thinking about, oh, what have I left at home or what have I got to do tomorrow while you're still half enjoying what you're watching. So it's a big thing. It's a big thing to sort of build that confidence and have that awareness to go, I'm walking out onto this stage and I'm here to absolutely take people's attention and take them on a journey, whatever that journey might be.
I think so. And it's a performance. It has a start and it has a finish. And I think that's something that I was going to say that a lot of people forget, but that's not really correct. I think a lot of guys in rock and roll sort of don't really distinguish between what happens on stage and what happens off stage. And now, to a certain extent, you know, from one angle, I can say that's fine because, you know, like an artist like Marilyn Manson, his whole thing is his entire life is a performance. So the dude you see on stage is the same dude you'll meet at the supermarket if you run into him. but in a lot of cases, I think people just kind of neglect the performance because they're trying to be cool or something.
Well, I think it's just a worry about people. I mean, especially, you know, for us, you know, growing up in Australia, it's that, you know, I think we spoke about this last time. It's that tall poppy syndrome. It's the criticism of being a bit of a wanker and, oh, look at this person sticking their head out and thinking that they're all that. And so people are very quick to cut people down, to bring it back down to the same level that we're all at, because none of us are great. You know, we're all just modest people, humble people, and we get on with life, you know, and there's an element of that sort of romantic vibe around, you know, staying humble and sort of, you know, staying sort of grassroots and, you know, very homely in the way that we interact with people. But, we need the flamboyancy. We need the, We need the theatrics. We need the drama. We need that stuff. And when it's on a stage, that's the place for it. And I think maybe a question for you is, like, you know, for the past year or so, I mean, you, as you said, it was a welcome break for you to be able to just recharge the batteries, just chill out for a bit, and just, you know, you've been working so hard for the past decade. But sort of coming, although you probably don't know when you're going to start performing again, but even sort of at the point that you are now, are you going to have to sort of go back and dig in deep again to sort of get back into that theatrical mode again? Or do you think that it's more just such a natural thing that's a part of your persona now that it's just not something that you have to dig deep and kickstart back into gear again? It's just there. So you'll just be able to switch in and just get started.
I reckon I'll be able to switch in pretty easily. I mean, like we were saying before, you can hear instantly if I decide that it's time to do the performance, you can hear me switch over straight away. I mean, it's like, I think it's kind of just part of who I am as a human. And if I were not doing this job and I were not on stage, this has been my experience back when I was doing normal jobs, the performer in me would just come out at normal times, you know? So I'd just be walking around and I'd do a lot of weird things. And that was kind of what people considered to be my talent, was in public suddenly doing things that other people wouldn't do because they would be embarrassed by it. But I would get a lot of energy from doing that kind of stuff. So for me, I think it was just in who I am as a person. And if it's not happening on stage, then the world will become the stage. And I guess to a certain extent, I'm kind of contradicting myself with what I just said about guys just getting on stage and the performance is the same thing as their life, aren't I?
Well, no, but I think there's elements of, obviously, I think the stage is just an extension. It's not so much that you're switching on and off dramatically different characters. I think it's just an element of your personality, you know, whether a very sort of common go-to is people like Alice Cooper. Alice Cooper says he's got a different person when he gets on stage versus his everyday life, you know, just normal person. But I think, you know, when he's on stage and he is Alice Cooper, I think that's just an extension of his personality. It's just the volume is just turned up and it's more dramatized. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a case of, you're carrying your personality, you're carrying who you are onto the stage, but you're just kicking it up a gear. You're kicking up a notch and making it more amplified.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would agree with that.
I think it just saved you on your contradiction.
Okay.
Maybe.
When you spoke to Chucky Starfish, did that Limp Bizkit album, Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water, that had nothing to do with him, right? That was just coincidence?
I think I didn't ask him, but I'm pretty sure it was just a coincidence. I probably should have thought about that because when I was looking up some stuff beforehand, I was obviously typing in the band name and, of course, the Limp Bizkit album was just showing up everywhere. I'm like, oh, get out of my vision. I'm trying to get the Aussie band here. So don't know for sure. I reckon that might just be a coincidence.
Okay. I wonder if he has any inner turmoil about that. As you know, like, I mean, because he is a prolific Australian musician.
Yep.
And now he's sort of a different generation, I suppose. He's not on stage still nowadays, is he?
Yeah, no, they've just, they've got a new album coming out soon. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize. That's fantastic. I didn't realize.
Yeah, yeah. So they're, they're going hard. I mean, they're, if anything, I think his big thing is that he doesn't want to become one of those old rockers that just does the local clubs around the haunts and plays the old hits. They're constantly just doing new stuff and just trying to reinvent themselves. So it's quite interesting. It's actually reassuring for a lot of the rest of us that are in bands, just thinking that, you know, your musical career doesn't sort of end in your 30s or in your early 40s or whatever. It just continues on and you can make it a part of your life for a very long time. So it's interesting, but I don't know whether he'd have a chip on his shoulder about that. Especially a band like Limp Bizkit, who was just so polarizing as far as grabbing people's attention. And style wise and musically and everything, which is so different to what they did. I don't know. It'd be very interesting to get their thoughts.
It would be, but I kind of feel like bringing that up might be an offensive topic to bring up though.
I might have to test the water because, you know, sometimes those little those little pokey questions can go a long way. It can uncover something that's quite interesting. So maybe you might have to take a risk. We'll see.
Right. So in my case, there's two other products which are called Lady Beard. There's some magazine called Lady Beard, and I think it's, I can't remember, a university magazine somewhere in the United States or something. I can't clearly remember.
And it's called Lady Beard.
Yeah, it's called Lady Beard. I'm the most famous Lady Beard.
Well, that's
but good. There's two, yeah, which is good. Which is good. I've got the trademark, so they can keep themselves away. So, yeah, but there's this magazine, but there's also some independent film. I think it's from Canada or something. So these are the other Lady Beards, apart from me, that exist in the world. And I look at them and I kind of say, well, that's interesting. And it doesn't, you know, like I kind of say power to them, and I don't have any chip on my shoulder or anything about them. I think because what they're doing is so clearly not what I'm doing, so it's pretty hard to get this Lady Beard confused with them. But I wanted to ask you, so there are other bands called Lord, right? And there's that Finnish monster band called Lordi.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, how do you guys interact with them? Has this ever caused any problems?
No, it hasn't. But it's, I mean, I think in hindsight, I always take a jab at Tim in our band, because I just go, surely of all the band names in the world, why the hell did you pick Lord? My God, you know, just such a hard, it's a hard name to search for. If you type Lord into Google, then, well, you know, you've got a good, pretty good idea of what's going to pop up in the first 20 pages of Google search results. And
of course, like evil kings and things.
Yeah, or just, yeah, that and yeah, everything and anything
and that,
with Lord.
That chick from New Zealand.
Well, that too. So, yeah, so there's Lordy, Lord with an E. And then there's, if anything, those ones haven't been too bad. The one that has really infiltrated our life, and I wouldn't say make it difficult, but just made it confusing for a lot of people, is there's a Hungarian band called Lord. And they're a 70s rock band, and they play just old 70s, 80s rock. And they are one of the most famous bands to ever come out of Hungary. They are incredibly popular. They sing all in Hungarian, and they're just they're gods over there. So we constantly get messages in Hungarian from people asking for us to write songs in dedication for their sons and daughters, or are we asking about tickets for a particular show somewhere in Hungary, and we're like, oh my God, like how can you get us confused? I get the name of the band's the same, but look at the photo. Like, just, we don't look anything like, and we don't sound anything like this band. So we get mixed in with them more so than anybody else. And it's not a big deal. I mean, you know, when we eventually get back out to touring again, I'd love to do a couple of shows in Hungary, but I'm always like reluctant. I'm thinking, oh, I wonder if we're going to get, you know, pelted with, you know, eggs or rocks or something like that. Bricks. Yeah. Right. Because, hey, you're not the real Lord. Or maybe we'll just confuse them so much that we just get a packed room and we do multiple sold out nights and they're pleasantly surprised when we walk on stage. I don't know. But yeah.
Why don't you contact them and see if you can tour with them? It'd be Lord and Lord.
The Lord package, the Lord tour.
That's right, the Lords.
Even if you couldn't tour, you could do a little collaboration. Just do a song and just split it down the middle. They can integrate some Hungarian sort of, you know, lyrics and throw some English in there. A bit of old 70s, 80s rock with a bit of heavy metal, and maybe we can get in the charts in Hungary.
Yeah. Yes, that'd be great. That'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it? You become a superstar in Hungary because of your collaboration with a band that just happened to have the same name as you. That'd be pretty cool.
It's cool. It's totally ridiculous, but that's what makes it so cool. So, all right. Well, you know, this podcast certainly brings out a lot of ideas. So here I am writing it down. So Lord and Lord collab.
Good man. Yeah. The Lord spectacle.
Yeah, spectacle.
Now, let me ask you something, and we're in public domain, so feel free to not answer if you don't want to.
Sure.
Apart from do this podcast and rock and roll, do you have another job that you also do?
Yeah, I do. And I won't say who I work for or anything like that. I've tried to keep, and I'm sure you probably appreciate it as well, trying to keep the the worlds somewhat apart, just from an identity point of view, because sometimes it gets a little bit clouded, and when the worlds start to interact with each other, there's always conflict of some sort. But I work as like a what's the best way of describing this without going into too much detail? I'm a bit of a, like a dispute resolution specialist. So I deal with matters that involve mediation and settlement conciliation discussions between parties that are not getting along. And attend a lot of like consumer tribunals and things like that, and magistrates. But purely from a customer service perspective. So no sort of legal, formal legal training or anything like that, but just customer service background, and just happened to find myself in this position where I've had to use the gift of my gab to get through difficult situations with people that are very, very volatile and highly emotional. So it's actually, I mean, for me, it is the best podcast material, because I could just talk about what I do in that space for days, and it would actually be quite interesting to talk about with a lot of different people. But maybe one day when I move on and I change careers. But it's certainly helped with the podcast. It's certainly helped with the band, just the communication skills and interacting with people. And, you know, as you would see in the music industry, you deal with so many different types of personalities. You deal with egos. You deal with people that are very flaky, everyone in between. And you're trying to manage these people through communication and building up rapport, maintaining contact. And especially in Japan, it'd be another level again, because you've got this element of respect and loyalty and maintaining these relationships and making sure people are remembered and acknowledged along the way, which is so foreign to a lot of Western culture. It's a real psychological sort of minefield that you have to run down. So I see a lot of that in what I do, but I think just touching on that, no doubt that's probably an everyday thing that you've got to manage.
I mean, relationships, definitely. And definitely. Once you're trying to do it in Japan, it's oh my goodness, if you're not a Japanese person, there's basically no way you can ever get it in Japan. As far as I can tell, one of my best friends here is an American dude who's lived here for more than 20 years. He still doesn't get it. Speaks perfect Japanese, like went to university and studied Japanese, so he reads and writes and all of it, and still just doesn't get it. So if you're not Japanese, you can never get it. You can only understand that you don't understand. But what happens is you kind of absorb it via osmosis. And then you don't understand why you need to do this thing, but you understand that you just do, because if you don't, it's going to ruin the harmony of the place. So conflict resolution over here would be a completely different gimmick. I have no idea how that would go about.
I would assume that a lot of it is like, and I'm just from my own firsthand experience with dealing with a lot of Japanese people, especially in music and record labels and sort of tour managers and things like that, is I think there's a sequence. There's a particular sequence of things that you need to do in order to address particular things and work through things. Whereas I think in sort of Western culture, it's a lot more emotionally driven, where you can hit it from a number of different angles, depending on the circumstance, depending on the context of what's actually happening and the personality of the individual, where I feel, and correct me if I'm way off the mark, but I feel that in Japan, there's a certain etiquette where you need to go through a series of steps of formalities to be able to have the opportunity to talk about anything that might be sensitive, and you'd be lucky even to get to that point.
You direct communication is offensive, basically. I was gonna say frowned upon, but I think offensive is probably a better word. You do not tackle things head on in Japan. You don't communicate directly. You have to circle the point, subtly dropping hints for a long time, and then it's up to the other person to pick up on your hints. And if they can't pick up on your hints, then the Japanese would consider someone like that socially inept. So that's what social skills are in Japan. It's like to Westerners, social skills are kind of being able to walk up to strangers and be confident and present yourself well and that kind of thing, and be able to talk to anyone. Whereas in Japan, it's much more about
reading between the lines of communication and catching the hidden meaning in what someone else is saying. So this is the example that I use. Now, this is, you know, this is hyperbole and I'm being ridiculous about it. But let's say you and I are sitting in a room and I want you to get me a glass of water. So in Australia, I would say, hey, dude, could you grab me a glass of water, please? And, you know, assuming everything's fine and we have rapport and everything, you say, yeah, sure. And you get me some water, you come back and give it to me. And I say, thank you very much. And it's over, right? Whereas in Japan, what we would do is I would sit there and I'd look up at the ceiling and I would say, this is total hyperbole. I'm making this up. This is ridiculous. I'm trying to illustrate my point. You would look up and I would look at the ceiling and I'd say, oh, Andy, isn't the design on this ceiling in this room, isn't it interesting and beautiful? And it would be your job to realize that I have my my neck crooked back so as to look up at the ceiling. And because my neck is crooked back like that, clearly my throat must be getting dry. So you should offer to get me some water. And you should say, oh, your neck must be dry. Your throat must be dry from having your neck in that position. I'll get you some water. And then I need to say, no, you don't need to do that. I don't need any water at all. Then you just say, no, I insist. I'm certain that you need water. And I'm like, no, really, I don't need any water at all. And you have to say, no, I'm certain beyond a shadow of a doubt that you desperately need me to get you some water right now. And I'd say, well, if it's not too much trouble, and then you'd go get the water and you'd give it to me. And I would, in receiving the water, I'd be like, it's a shame on all my ancestors that I have accepted this water from, you know. So you can't just directly say things in Japanese. You have to beat around the bush with everything.
There'd be an element of that which should actually be quite beneficial to learn, as far as being able to pick up on cues and subtleties in people's behavior to be able to be proactive in situations. Because one thing that I've always admired and adored from Japanese people and friends that have been, you know, Japanese people, is that there's, at least on the surface anyway, appears to be this proactive, thoughtful sort of thinking ahead, trying to make sure that person is taken care of. And I'm sure that there's an underlying level of stress and anxiety that sits within that person to do that. But on the receiving end, just to have somebody that's mindful or thoughtful to that extent is just something that's so different and just doesn't exist as much in Western culture. But I assume that comes at a very significant price.
Comes at such a high price. I mean, that's, you know, yeah, exactly what you said. Yeah, there's constant stress. There's what I feel I observe, and keep in mind, I'm a foreigner. So like I said, I'm going to get it. So this is what I think I am observing. I think I'm observing everybody being just so stressed out of their mind under the surface all the time, just because of the way they have to operate within the culture and the society. But they must always maintain the illusion of harmony in all things. So therefore, no one can ever express themselves. And there's a lot of haste with very little speed. There's a lot of fussing about things, but then not actually getting a result. But the result is not the point. Maintaining the processes and maintaining the traditions and the way things have always been done and maintaining this illusion of harmony is the result in itself, as opposed to getting results. So that's what I think I'm observing. And keep in mind, I've only been here 7 years, so in the scheme of things, that's not very long. But that's what I think I'm observing. Yes, you are right. Definitely to have that level of sensitivity, I think, is a good thing. However, I think if you took that level of sensitivity to anywhere outside Japan, you'd get in trouble, because you'd be reading hidden meaning into all kinds of things that just have no hidden meaning. Like someone would say, can I have a beer, please? And you would think to yourself, oh, dear me, I've offended him with the color of my socks. You know, like, well, no, I just wanted a beer.
Yeah, I guess it's one extreme to the other, isn't it? It's just there's no balance in between of having just elements of it all. And yeah, I think, I mean, especially for me, like I've I've been there. I've been to Japan quite a few times over the years, but have not, I guess, as a mass amount of time, spent a lot of time there. And so for my, you know, you're sort of giving yourself that sort of, you know, sort of disclaimer to say that you've only been there for 7 years, but I mean, it's still 7 years. And I understand in comparison to people that have been living there and are born and raised there, different story. And I think for me, it's another extreme again down the chain where for me, when I rock up, I'm seeing the surface of a lot of society. And, you know, for a foreigner, when you first see Japan, you experience it, it's just this amazing place. And the mannerisms, the hospitality, the way that people interact with you is just absolutely fantastic. And once I get to like the third or the fourth or the seventh or the eighth time I go back, then I start to see more of what Japan really is. And my friends that I've built these relationships over the years start to show a little bit more of themselves to me over the years, because they're not just putting on, you know, that front and those, on those first interactions, they're starting to get used to me and can open up a little bit more and they share a little bit more. I'm like, oh, wow, this is actually really fascinating. And while there's still so many fantastic, and it's like any country, I mean, you know, not just to pick on Japan, Japan's just the topic, but, you know, Japan has these amazing qualities that the Western world absolutely adores. But underneath that, everything comes at a price. There's always something that's being compromised underneath the surface. And it's very fascinating just to see, you know, circling back to what you were talking about before with that whole audition process and just observing human behavior and just seeing how people interact in a different culture. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So one of the things we're trying to do with Baby Beard is we're trying to make like those wonderful pop culture elements of Japan more readily available to the outside world. So to me, it's sort of like Japan and its culture is kind of like a double-edged sword. It's like everyone outside observes and loves it and is so thirsty to get more of the content. However, Japan and the Japanese actively don't want it getting out. But if they did just say floodgates open, that would change the nature of the content, you see.
That's right.
So it's this mentality that creates the content that everybody wants that they can't get because of the mentality. So that's, you know, it's because of this sense of Japaneseness that we have everything that's amazing about Japan, like, you know, manga and anime and baby metal and, you know, Baby Beard, woo, just slip some PR in there again. Lady Beard plus two Japanese girls, Baby Beard, streaming our first two songs, Nippon Kara Konnichiwa and Pianizer, on streaming platforms from April 28. Yoroshiku onegaishimasu. Back to casual talk. It's kind of one of the things we're trying to do is kind of, you know, give a bit more access to everyone around the world who's so desperately wants access, but it's so difficult to get the access, you know.
But I think I've used this term a few times in this chat, but everything comes at a price. And I think in order to find like the magic in, say, what Baby Beard's doing and what you've been doing for the past several years, there is a compromise there, and part of that is that clash of Western and Eastern worlds where you've got this, I mean, that's what Japan has been admired for, is that they've been so closed off and really sort of made sure that their culture and everything is protected and their arts and everything. And they have brought people in over the years and brought some influence, and they have opened up to the Western world over the past several decades. But they are still very much, it is Japan. Like, it is Japan. Like, everything that you think of Japan is Japan still. And so for you, being a Westerner, trying to find your place in Japan, create this persona, create this career, and now, you know, launching Baby Beard as well, I would just feel that your life on a day-to-day basis is a constant clash between these worlds that are just trying to interact together, but are probably at times trying to repel away as well.
I'm not sure if repel away is correct. I think it comes down to, at any given moment, I just need to keep in the front of my mind where I am, who I'm with, and what I'm doing. Because, you know, we tour a lot when there's no virus. So we're all around the world all the time. And you just gotta, like, it's the danger is when you slip into autopilot and you start doing things the Japanese way elsewhere, or you start doing things the elsewhere way in Japan. That's when you kind of run into trouble. And what will happen is you'll have a strange moment with a different, like a person or a system, and then you'll get jolted out of your autopilot. You'll be like, oh, that's right, we're here, and this is the way this must be done here. Aha. And you'll have to kind of slip back into that mode. But what is actually quite confronting is the, like, I've been in Japan 7 years now, but I've been out of Australia for 15. So what ends up happening is when you come home, home has changed while you weren't there. So now home doesn't feel like the place that you left. So now you're sort of a stranger in your own land and a stranger in the foreign land that you're living in. So you're left with this bizarre situation of being a ghost floating through the world. You're always with the systems and the conventions of a place. You always feel like you're sort of on the outside, even when you come home.
I can appreciate that just on a very basic level of moving away from home, moving interstate to another city, and sort of, and then eventually years later, a decade later, 15 years later, you know, coming back home for a visit and just realizing that everything that you're used to is just no longer there, or you've changed so much since then.
Yes.
You can't relate. It's even like, you know, family, you miss your family, you go home, you spend a bit of time with them, and after a day or two, you're like, oh, I can't wait to get the fuck out of here. Oh my God, I can't wait. But, because you just changed so much, and you're used to such a different way of life. You've opened up your world to so many different people and experiences. But I guess, I mean, when you say the word ghost, I'm like, oh, sounds so depressing. And I would assume that there would be an elements of that at times where you probably feel a little bit lost or sort of not have that grounding. But I guess in, you know, going back to our optimistic aspect of it all, you know, maybe there's a bit of some liberating feelings that you have where you aren't tied down to something and you can always find some place as you move through life.
Well, yeah. And also it opens you up to a lot of opportunities and experiences that you would never have if you just stayed home.
Yeah. Definitely.
So it's again, it's just like Japan. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Also, I'm being a bit hyperbolic, I suppose, when I say I'm like a ghost. I don't feel that way at every moment. There's times when I come home and I'm like, ah, my boys, it's the same as it was when we were in high school, you know. We live in a complex, interesting world, young Andy.
We do, and I think for you, I mean, just, you know, based on your every, like, in comparison to your everyday Joe Blow, I mean, what you're doing is an amplified version of life, as far as choosing not only to just, not just to get out of your neck of the woods, like you're part of the country, but to get out of the country completely, go to a completely different culture and move around to a number of different countries that all have dramatically different cultural aspects or ways of life. And you've had to constantly, you know, adjust and reinvent along the way. And for you now, like, you know, baby beard, you know, it's talk about polarizing. I mean, for you and who you are, and mixed in with a couple of Japanese girls as well, and putting together this music where your tagline is an adorable assault on the senses.
Yes, baby beard, an adorable assault on the senses, streaming April 28th.
So, I mean, it goes back to that amplified, exaggerated way of living. And it, I mean, it's just, I think the great thing about it, and no doubt for you from time to time, it can be taxing because you are living in some respects a very extreme life, because you're doing things that most people will not do. But I think for everybody that's observing and watching from the outside, it's, well, of course, entertaining and enjoyable. But I think also for a lot of us who pine for, you know, just wanting something more out of life, it's just inspiring to watch somebody just get out there and just throw themselves into all these different incredible extreme things. So it's great.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm if I'm sounding negative in any way, I apologize. Like, I'm also very, very aware of how lucky I am to get to do all the interesting stuff that I have gotten to do and get to do. One of the things that I always kind of wanted to achieve with this career, if there was to be a message from the career, I kind of always wanted it to be one of, you know, you, as in, you know, anyone observing, you can do whatever it is that you want to do, no matter how ridiculous it sounds or seems, and no matter how much other people tell you it's not possible, because if I can achieve this, then you can achieve what you want to achieve. The thing is, like, this is, the more time I spend doing this, the more I realize you can do whatever the hell you want. You just need to get up and actually do it. That's what most people won't do. They'll talk about it and they'll be like, yeah, I would love to do that. And maybe at some point they'll go, yeah, no, I've decided I'm going to do it. And then they just don't do it. So whatever you want to do, you want to go to space, you want to bloody move to, I don't know, Senegal, you want to, whatever you want to do, you can do it, but you have to do it.
And it's just, I mean, it's not even a case of, you know, a lot of us have goals or dreams of things that we want to do. And it's not just about today I'm where I'm at and tomorrow I'm going to be at that end goal. I'm going to be doing that straight away. It's taking that first step. And the first step might be just something really simple. It might just be, well, probably not so much these days making a phone call, but it might be sending an email or sending somebody a message on social media or following somebody or deciding that, you know, if you want to learn something, making the choice to watch a few YouTube videos or sign up for a little course or something tiny, just something where it's a step in the right direction. And before you know it, like anything, you get momentum, you build things up, and before you know it, you look back and go, fuck, how the hell did I get here? Like, how the hell did I get to where I am now? I would never have thought that I could get this far. And it's not about thinking so far ahead. It's just about, what do I do right now? What's the first thing I do?
It's just day by day, just tiny actionable steps that you can consistently take, which compound over time. I get asked, I perform at anime conventions around the world a lot. And at almost every anime convention, almost the first question that comes in the question and answer is always, how did you learn Japanese? And people seem to think that there's some kind of silver bullet or something. you just study. That's it. You get your teacher, you get your books, you get your exercises, and you just study. And you, day by day, you just grind it out and you don't stop. That's how you end up speaking Japanese.
And I think, I mean, really, the only silver bullet that would be involved with that would be just being around people that actually speak the language. But
well, that's
even,
right. That's,
even without it, you can still do it. It just might take a little bit longer. Anything just involves your own effort and putting in the time, and it'll come eventually.
Yes, exactly. I agree. And just consistency. Just even if you do it for literally 1 minute, if you do it for literally 1 minute a day, then after, you know, in a year, you've done 365 minutes. And so
it's more than what people would do in a lifetime.
Right, exactly. So those minutes add up. So it's just consistency. This has turned into a Tony Robbins podcast. Look at this. Look at this.
Well, I think we should end on a high note, because we're getting people inspired, we're getting them motivated, and I think a call to action is not only to just work out what they want to do with their life and take that first step, but I think they need to go and check out Baby Beard. Follow on the socials and everything. So tell me, where should people start? Because I know this episode's going to come out after the announcement, but it will be before the singles come out. So where do people need to get set up and get ready to get assaulted with an adorable assault on the senses? That's right.
Yes, people, please begin at the Ladybeard social medias, at Ladybeard_Japan on the Twitty Twooty and the Facey Bookie and the Instant Ham and the Tiki Toki. And then there's going to be a link in the description, and also on my social media, you will find the Baby Beard social media. Baby Beard coming at you. Song starts streaming April 28th.
You can go to our TikTok and you can see our amazing pre-release material, which is gonna make you smile. It's gonna make you sing. It's gonna make you take off one of your shoes and maybe tie it to the fan. That's an extreme thing to do. You don't need to do that. It's just a suggestion. But it's going to change your life. It's an adorable assault on the senses. Ladybeard, Suzu, Kotomi, Babybeard, coming at you.
I love it. All of that, and I'll have it all in the show notes as well. People can check it out. And I tell you what, I'm just going to leave it. This is where we're going to end off this conversation. And we need to catch up again, whether it be when eventually I can get over to Japan and we can catch up or next time you're back home. But I don't know the budget. We're going to have to work out the budget. We're going to have to work out the logistics of it all. But I think you'd be a fantastic MC for Lord when we go on tour.
Oh.
Do a bit of hype. Get the crowd going. Yes. And I mean, look, depending on where we are in the world, you might have to actually headline and we might have to try and hype you guys up. But but I think there's an opportunity there, and I need to work this one out. So leave it with me. I'll come back to you with a pitch at some point in the future.
All right, mate. Well, look, why don't we sort it out with the Lord Hungry tour? We could do the Lord and Baby Beard. One of these things just doesn't belong here. It'll be a match made in heaven. Can you imagine that tour?
A bit of
classic metal, a bit of 70s rock, and then some screaming with some Japanese kids. Great fun. Cross-dressed pop metal. That'd be great fun. Anything is possible. Hey, get to work on your Hungarian, my friend. 1 minute a day.
Hey, now go and follow Ladybeard on the socials, Ladybeard_Japan. And by the time you listen to this, Babybeard will be announced. So you can have a look for the Babybeard social media pages. But I will update the show notes, of course, with all those social media handles, including Ladybeard. And on the 28th of April, if you're listening to this beforehand, there are two singles that are coming out. One is Nippon Kara Konnichiwa, and the other one is Pinaza. I'm pretty sure I butchered both of them, but you'll catch the drift. I'll have everything in the show notes. And once the 28th rolls around, I will update the show notes and have links to those songs in particular. Definitely give them a stream, add them to your playlists, share them around with your mates. No doubt, I have not heard the songs yet, but I'm predicting that they're going to be absolutely ridiculous. In true Ladybeard fashion, they're just going to be next level crazy, just out there stuff. So stay tuned for that. If you're listening to this after the 28th of April, just go into the show notes. You'll be able to access all that stuff and share it around. Give them a bit of love. Reach out to Ladybeard and let him know what you thought of the chat. Now, before we wrap it up, of course, Patreon. Patreon.com/AndyDowling is the best way to support this podcast. And my goal for 2021 is to get as many $1 supporters as possible. As many as possible. $1 a month. That's all it takes. It's the entry level tier. It's the best way to support this podcast. And when I get a lot of you, it's obviously fantastic from a monetary point of view, but more importantly, it's a great motivator. It's an accountability piece. And I've always said this and I'll continue to say it, but the reason why Andysocial exists in 2021 and the reason why we're doing two episodes a week is purely because of the legends over at Patreon. So I'm just absolutely humbled and thankful for these amazing people that have joined over at Patreon. So go to patreon.com/AndyDowling. If you want access to the exclusive Patreon podcast or a bunch of free shit, then there are additional tiers there that you can support in a number of different ways and get access to an array of different things. I'll thank you. And I'll also thank, good recovery. I've also got to thank the legends in my top tiers, over at Patreon. I'm struggling here. Come on, Andy, you can get through this. My top tiers over at Patreon. These legends are the heavy hitters. They're the heavy lifters of Patreon, and they're part of the wider community of absolute just great people that are supporting me in the podcast. So a massive thank you to Andrew from Perth, Mick G from Sydney, Ash from Deniliquin, Dan from Dapto, Rod from Raleigh, North Carolina, Patrick from Canberra, Liam from Brisbane, Chris from Sydney, Brendo from Leeton, Tim from Canberra, James from Brisbane, Christian from Canberra, Steve from the Gold Coast, and Andrew from Sydney. Thank you very much. And if I've missed your name and you've signed up in between, never fear. Your name will be read out in an upcoming podcast over the coming weeks and months. So stay tuned for that. But go over to patreon.com/AndyDowling. It's a great way to support the podcast. I think that's about time to wrap it up. I think it's a great place to stop crapping on and rambling. Next episode, who knows? I've got no idea. It'll be episode 287. getting closer to 300. By all means, give me recommendations for episode 300. Apart from the bleeding obvious, my Moby Dick. I'm not going to tell you who it is because it's pretty obvious. It's John Farnham, by the way. But apart from him, just anybody else that you got a suggestion for to be on the podcast, let me know. I'd be definitely keen to get your thoughts and get your feedback, and we'll see who we can get on. But I've got a lot of amazing people coming up over the coming weeks, so stay tuned for that. Keep spreading the word. Join me on Patreon, and until next episode, folks, take care and ta-ta. Larry, please.